Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One, two, three, four.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to West 5 Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and credit to that team, they're really well coached. I'm Joel Bracken at WV Stats Guy. Joined as always, Jordan Pinto. He's at Game Day Shorts. And if you couldn't tell from the intro, Neil's presser kind of started that way this week, which is usually not a great indicator on the performance of the Mountaineers.
He also thanked the Miners. So
he did thank the Miners to start the presser this week. But hey, credit to those guys at Iowa State. They're well coached, and they executed the game plan, and they made more plays than us. So unfortunately, we've heard that story a few times. A lot of hype coming into the weekend. I think it looked like it was a day in Morgantown. It looked like it was a night, at least for a few drives. And, you know, team hung around and was within the game and well within reach even late into the game, or at least like maybe through three-ish quarters. But don't get the job done. Kind of another one, I feel like we've seen them before. So how you doing, Jordan?
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic, Joel. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Yeah. We talk about it every week. What a polar opposite experience, though, from last week, though, right? Like, I ended up not making it to the game, and this is one of the ones where it's just like, you know, I'm not that upset. It was kind of like, I'm glad I didn't drive for that. I'm glad I didn't sit through that in person. I'm glad I could kind of walk away from it, and get more refreshments to help me on my way. Last night, but it's a tough one to swallow, man, you know, cause we pretty much nailed it in the breakdown. I feel like said, look, this team plays good football. They play clean football. They're not going to hurt themselves. We need to do that, on our side. If we're going to have a chance to win, we didn't even come anywhere close to it. Didn't win the game. Maybe some bad breaks. I know Neil in his presser was lamenting a lot of missed calls. Maybe some of that stuff went against us. But I think my biggest takeaway is it's just a massive indictment that I think we've had at least as much talent as Pitt and now as much as Iowa State, and we lost both games. And, you know, it's just this trend of even with all things equal, we still seem to find a way to fail more than half of the time. And I think to your point of, you know, we've seen this presser before, we've seen this game before. It ultimately and unfortunately seems like the only thing that this program has done with any consistency in 6 years is find ways to lose winnable games in big spots and walk right up to the edge of building momentum before popping the balloon. Everybody does the definition of insanity quote, but like that's kind of where it feels like we are right now, where it's just like, you know, we look fantastic against Oklahoma State last week. I'm an idiot, so I just let myself walk right back into being fully gung-ho, full steam ahead on the hype train. And you just can't no-show like that. And like, when is the last big game that we showed up for? I mean, we lay an egg in this one. We looked awful. The Penn State game is one of the worst games I've seen us play in the Neil Brown era. Going back to last year, Oklahoma, Penn State, we no-showed both of those games. Texas the year before that, Texas Tech that same year. I mean, you just go back, and it feels like every time this team starts to take a step forward, they turn in like the worst performance that I've ever fucking seen. And it's got two kids, enough stress in my life. And it's just hard to keep fucking beating our head against the wall, man. I don't know. Like, where are you at?
Yeah, this is a tough one, and I don't have the stat in front of me, but I believe this is the eighth straight ranked loss we have. So, you know, we talked, we hadn't won a ranked game since Iowa State when Brock Purdy was the quarterback. It's been a minute. So
I think I saw it like 1,100 days or like over 1,000 days. Anyways,
it's over 2,000 days. Yeah, it's a long time. Oh, sorry. That's since we've been ranked. We've been ranked over 2,000
since
days.
We've won a ranked game, though. I think it's been over 1,000 days now.
Yeah, that would be in the neighborhood. It's been a while. And, you know, this was an odd one because these are the kinds of games that I think you and me have been on the Neil train for a really long time. And these are the kinds of games that, you know, with all the extra stakes, you know, the Coal Rush, the ranked home game at night, you know, on Fox, all the sort of additionals. Yeah, I just don't feel like we've actually won one of these under Neil. And when you look at the game and just even the way you feel about it, you know, the game was actually a lot closer than it maybe felt like through like the early to mid fourth quarter. Post-game win expectancy was just 60% to Iowa State, which is kind of surprising to me. You know, what this game came down to me is really just not taking advantage of opportunities. I think the glaring stat for me on this walkaway is going to be, we had five drives inside the 40. We got 17 points. So two touchdowns, a field goal, and two empty drives. So, I mean, two touchdowns success. You have three drives that get 3 points. That's not enough to get it done. Obviously, the missed field goal after the review and all the stuff, like that was just like a gut punch. And almost just like from like the vibe meter, which is, you know, maybe not unrealistic in college sports. Like I think it does affect these kids, like the momentum and all the stuff. But man, you miss, you know, you have you think you're in a first down inside the 10. You don't, you miss the field goal. That's a chip shot. And then you allow a seam route to their best receiver wide open untouched. And I think there was just like the collective groan where everyone's like, oh man, so it's one of these, because it's just kind of what we've seen so many times. And that's the thing where I'm just like, are we infected at this point where it's like, we're not going to be able to get over this hump, because I don't even know if we believe we can get over this hump. Our fan, like that's the thing. It's like coming out. I mean, like, I think all the energy was there. If you go up 10 or 14 on that drive, huge. And then in, you know, a snap of your fingers, it's a tie game. And do our fans believe we're going to win the game? You know, like, I think more of them probably don't than do. And that's just like what really stinks, because, man, we were just as good as that team. We were just as talented as that team. And, you know, some turnovers, some missed opportunities, it really, you know, swings the game.
Yeah, I think we lost it on three sequences, man. The one you mentioned, the first interception, possible no call. I know we were texting about it a little bit today. I felt like Iowa State got a little bit of the benefit of the doubt of, oh, it's Iowa State, they play clean football. Kind of like, remember, like Oklahoma State a couple years back when their defense was just eating faces, and it's like, oh, they're in your face, they press your receivers. And it's like, yeah, okay, but you're letting them hold on like half of these plays just because you think that, you know, it's – I mean – we were on the other side of that with Press Virginia, right? Where it's like, we're going to foul you every fucking play. They can only call so many of them, you know, and it works until it doesn't. But, you know, I do feel like they got away with some stuff last night, and there were some pretty blatant no calls on some obvious things that were frustrating. I don't know. You know, I think you mentioned you went back and looked. The only one that really affected the game was the defensive holding. But sorry, that was a quick ref bitch session. The second sequence was the no call. Cole Taylor possibly held. We throw an interception. This is one of the empty drives that you're talking about inside their 40. And then I think they go and score a touchdown from that, right?
Yeah. Well, the points off turnovers were 14 to nothing.
Yeah. So, and I think that's what made it 21-10, right? Because was it 14-10 at that point?
The interception led to a touchdown that made it 21-10.
Yeah. Right. So we're driving in to go up. We're driving in to go up there. No call, interception.
Defense is playing.
Say what?
sorry, I said late third quarter, the defense has been doing its job in the second half. You're driving to take the lead, and then, yeah.
And then that happens, right? And so just another pop, there goes another balloon. And so now it's 21-10. I don't know what we're doing on the second interception. The third sequence, though, is the second interception, short field. Defense stands up admirably, stacks them up, stops them. They're going to end up having to kick a field goal, and I'm texting everybody. And I think this is following like a fourth down conversion as well, where I was like, shit, okay, so they converted a fourth down, but then we stood up, get them to third down, get the defensive holding call. Where, you know, I guess if I'm on the other side of this, I probably am saying that it's defensive holding, but like the dude is just standing stationary in the back of the end zone. And Aiden Garnes has his hands on like both of his hips. But it's not like the guy is like fighting to get open or fighting to like run along the baseline of the end zone or anything like that. He's just not doing anything. Rocco Beck throws it into the fucking band, and then the flag comes in. And, you know, then the rest is history. They score the touchdown. They go up 28-10. But, you know, and I think that's what's so frustrating. Like, you look at the stats, like they outgained us by, I don't know, 30, 40 yards, something like that. First downs, very similar. Third down conversions, yards per play, all this stuff, like very similar. The difference in the game is the two turnovers, you know, one of which maybe shouldn't have been a turnover in my biased opinion. And then the penalties, we have seven penalties for, you know, what, 70 yards or something like that. They have 1 for 10. And I know that they play clean, but like, you know, even if you don't want to call the Cole Taylor one, Rocco Becht threw the ball to nobody on the sideline inside the guard. Not even like questionable. Like, is he outside the tackle? He's inside the fucking guard. He's standing behind the center, just throws it into our sideline and there's no call. And so, you know, I think it's just like this combination of stuff where it's just like the defense is playing good. Okay, great. Pop the balloon on the other side of the ball. When the offense is playing good, boom, busted coverage, pop the balloon on the defensive side of the ball. You know, it's just like we played such complimentary football at Oklahoma State last week. And then this week it was just a complete opposite. Every time that one side of the ball needed the other side to pick them up, they fucking let them down. And, against a team like Iowa State, which again, I don't think is more talented than us, but they're a much better football team for sure. Yeah. Cause they don't do shit like that. Right. That's why they're undefeated. That's why they're going to be ranked in the top 10. That's why we're sitting at fucking 3-3. Talking about firing our coach and, you know, can we get to a bowl? Can we get to 6 wins and make a fucking bowl game? Is because we do shit like that every week. Every single week we do shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, that team, Iowa State, what I was so impressed is, like, you kind of think some people believe turnovers are kind of a random event. And, you know, they were very plus on the year on turnovers. One of the best in the country. And you're kind of, I mean, I'm just waiting, especially in the second half, like, we need a break, we need a turnover. I mean, I don't think there was a single ball that was in danger of being turned over.
No.
And we maybe got away with an additional, which I guess it didn't end up mattering because I think it was the same drive we missed a field goal, but Garrett about threw one in the end zone.
Who's trying to force one to Preston Fox? It's like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was a rough one. And man, Garrett, such an interesting game because, you know, PFF grades actually come out really good for Garrett in this game. And what duality of performance, because I don't think Garrett Green's a problem in the offense. I'm just going to start with that. Like, Garrett Green is the generator of so many positive things in this offense. And I think, like, the perfect encapsulation of, like, the Garrett Green experience when we're in a game where he has to throw the ball a lot is the kind of two, it was a 3-play sequence, but I'm going to focus on the first and the last, where high snap, it's like the 8th high snap of the night, busted play. He takes it for like 40 yards up the left hash. And you're like, wow, so glad that we have this player who can generate something out of literally like less than nothing, like a negative occurrence, and he turns it into like 40 yards. And then 2 plays later, he throws behind Cole Taylor, who did get 2-hand pushed. It was like, it's a weird call because it's within the like where they can get their hands on you, but like it's as the ball was in the air, he gets pushed out of the way, but it's a double coverage throw. He throws it behind him and gets picked. There was just such a like back-to-back play where I was like, wow, the Garrett Green experience is a roller coaster. Man, when it hits, it hits. Yeah. And you know, that one just stunk. The second pick was I think a bad decision, and you know, I think he probably would own that too. But man, you were good enough to win this game. The crazy thing is, with 18 minutes left in the game, you're driving with a chance to take the lead, and like everything's still in front of you, even though you had missed opportunities and didn't play as good as you would like to, you know, to start the game. But ends up being a weird game, just a 9-possession game, and you come up short. And I think the way it rolled along in the fourth quarter, especially after the second Garrett Green pick, I mean, that's just where, like, I think we are quite the wounded fan base, in the sense that it's like,
yeah.
I mean, when they had the ball and you know, burned an extra like 6 minutes off the clock and then still ended up with another touchdown to put it 3 scores. I mean, like that, I'm not even going to lie. I turned it off and I put the Ohio State game on because I wanted to catch the end of that. Because it's just like, yeah, I know how this is going to get. It stinks. I came back after the Ohio State ending, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. This is where we're at.
Are there any positives that you would highlight here if we're trying to pick people up a little bit?
I mean, the defense played really well, I think, for the majority of the game. I think you kind of got to be fine with that performance. Obviously, like, the seam route was pretty busted. There was another reception along the left side of the field that was kind of a busted coverage.
It was like the first play of the game, wasn't it? First drive anyways.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the defense did its job. I mean, you're hoping you're going to be able to score more than... I mean, we only had 10 points until what I would almost consider was garbage time.
Definitely garbage time. Yeah,
soft coverages, sure, on that scoring drive. So through 8 drives, I guess you'd say we had 10 points. And man, Neil Brown is so good on the scripted drive, because 7 of those points came on the first drive. And, you know, you were hoping you'd more than zero on the second drive. Probably should have been worth more than zero. But... man, there is a point when you are who you are. You know, you are who your record says you are. And we just don't win these games. And we haven't won these games in a long time. And, you know, I've seen lots of discourse about, you know, what is West Virginia's true value in terms of, like, do we want to blame this coach? Well, we have a similar winning percentage against this type of team in the past and all this stuff. And I will just say, like, we've had some down years in the past, but also we had teams who won these games. And we haven't won a single one of these games.
I would say at least some of them. We have never won lots of these games.
Yeah, I don't think we've pissed down our leg on some games we should have won with other coaches, but we won some of these sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, Dana beats number 4 Baylor, right? Like, I mean, Rich Rod punched up how many times? Bill Stewart, I think I saw the stat, was 2-2 against ranked teams, but that was with a really good team. But like, yeah, even Dana, I mean, the Dana teams. Yeah, we shit the bed a lot, but you felt like you had a puncher's chance, like, a lot of the time, even when we were punching up, you know, up a weight class. Like, I mean, we had an even rec. We split with Texas in the Big 12, right? I don't think we never beat Oklahoma with Dana, but like, we took Oklahoma to the wire like 4 times, you know. Yeah.
The most damning stat, I think, in West Virginia football history is that we were 3-0 in BCS bowls, because in this, like, golden era, like, we played the big boys and kind of kicked their ass all 3 times. And that's, like, forever the benchmark, that it's like, hey, the old teams could beat anybody, just about anybody in the country. And, I mean, we're not even close to that. And
no.
Iowa State is, like, who we wish we were. But I'm going to find a Musket tweet and read it here in a second. But the gist is just that you look around college football and there's these teams, including the one we dislike the most, who can somehow, like, flip their identity year to year. And, like, you know, Indiana's a good example. There's these teams that can, like, turn things around. And somehow we're kind of in this year 6 where it's like, obviously I'm still going to root for the team, but it's almost... the unlikeliness of us never winning a game like this is almost getting surreal, where it's just like, man, it's kind of crazy we have not broken through on one of these, because, like, we were good enough to win this game. We have enough talent, and situationally, man, we were 2 plays away from having the lead going into the fourth quarter. And then, you know, this thing can play out very different. We don't have to pass the ball as much, you know, like
2 plays away from being up 14-0. I mean, like, yeah. Just fucking puke. Okay. Positives. Well, so you said the defense played well. I agree, but you mentioned it was like an 8 or 9 possession game. I did feel like they played super hard. They made Iowa State work for it, but I also felt like Iowa State got the yards they needed when they needed them. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, no, they
for
did.
The most part. I don't have the box score in front of me. Did they punt more than once?
They were on 3rd and 4th down. They were a combined 11 for 16. They converted, and several of the times it was like the one that stuck in my brain was like curl route, and the guy caught the ball at 8 yards, and he like juked us out and fought for the extra yard. You know, like he caught the ball before the sticks, and
yeah,
was able to, you know.
Yeah. So I mean, the defense is playing better. I think that is a definite. That is a factual statement. I do still feel like Iowa State got the yards that they needed when they needed them. 26, Carson Hansen. I felt like kind of, I don't want to say bullied us, but you know, I mean, it felt like he was falling forward all night. We did get to Becht a little bit, which I thought was good. I mean, the defensive line continues to be the strength of the defense by far. The front six in general, linebackers were good. I thought Jaheim looked really good again.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Traylon Ray looked fantastic. Honestly, you know, you were talking about Garrett's PFF grade. He threw some really nice balls on crossing routes that are not balls that he has traditionally like just put on the money, but like stepped up and absolutely stuck him like right on the 7 for Traylon Ray. Gave him an opportunity to run after the catch. I mean, that happened. Honestly, it was happening regular enough in the second half where it's like, why are we not doing this more like all the time? Yeah. And I think the commentators, I really like Devin Gardner, by the way. Brando's a fucking mess. but I really like Devin Gardner, and he was called out. He's like, you know, Traylon Ray is like the one guy when you watch West Virginia who consistently gets separation. And I mean, the guy's a player, and Garrett stuck on him a bunch last night in some pretty tight windows. Speaking of which, there was a play, I want to say it was a 3rd down and like 7. Garrett's rolling out, and they were like, oh, he's got a ton of room, and like he probably should have run it, but he tried to throw one to Traylon Ray, and it ended up being about a foot in front of Traylon Ray. But like when you watch the replay, their safety like runs into Traylon like a second before the ball gets there and grabs his jersey, and they just don't call it. Like that's another one where I was just like, what? You know, what the fuck are we doing here? But anyways, so positives. Yeah, defense is definitely playing better from the first 3 weeks. Jaheim looked good. Traylon looked good. Garrett was mostly good except for like two stupid plays. But I mean, really, that was the difference in the game. It was 2 or 3 stupid plays. Busted coverage, 2 interceptions. And that was the difference in the game.
This game was closer than it felt through the middle of the fourth quarter. It really was. And that's
I'm looking forward to did we really get beat that bad thing? Because I would assume that that's going to be
pretty flat.
For a game that was 28-10 into garbage time.
Yeah.
They were not that much better than us.
If I had to highlight, how about Mulba? Mulba had a really nice game.
He's good.
And he got called out from the commentators as well he was everywhere. TJ Jackson continues to play really well. I mean, looking
leading
at grade,
the Big 12 in pressure. Dude's got 25 pressures through 6 games.
Yeah. Traylon Davis also, you know,
caught a pass.
Fought as a blocking tight end, has now caught a pass in back-to-back games, and is also continuing to block well. Like, I mean, he was, I think, our second best run block grade. That's including all the offensive line.
Oh, that's a good highlight. So, I mean, we've talked about Cole Taylor. You know, I thought he played well, and we got him the ball a lot last night, which was good. Yeah. I mean, what did he have? 5 or 6 catches. Definitely the most we've targeted him in a single game this season. So that's good to see because, you know, feel like he's been pretty underutilized. So good to see us using him a little bit more.
Can we talk about the center? Should we talk about the center?
Let it rip.
Yates clearly had an injury, and I think Neil confirmed the injury afterwards. And this is no hate or shade to Brandon Yates. Like, I get it. You're fighting through an injury. You're trying to do what you got to do.
And of course he wants to play. Of course he wants to be out there. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, he wants to play. Like, no one's ever going to sub themselves out. I don't know if it was a wrist or a finger, hand, what it was, but it looked like he couldn't, like, do the flicking motion of his wrist. Like, he was just pushing the ball back. And so the ball was coming in at that, like, high spiral, and it was oftentimes going at least up, you know, up high, and Garrett had to jump up and grab it. I mean, we had to have known that coming into the week. I think we did know he was hurt this week. And at what, how many high snaps does it take until you consider a change? Are we just not able to switch centers in the middle of the game? Well, I know that it's a very difficult situation, but
Livingston came in. Yates got hurt last week. Livingston came in for two or three series and played really well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like after like the seventh or eighth bad snap, and
I mean, how many drives did that hinder like severely? Because the nine possession game, three of your drives were kind of shut down.
Three where we're moving the ball and it's first down and the snap's high and we're trying to hand it off to somebody and fucking Garrett trips the running back with his leg trying to jump and catch the fucking snap, and now it's second and 14 against a defense who wants to drop eight and keep everything. And I mean, it was.
And I think more than the count is, like, situationally, we're a team. I don't think it's any surprise. We need to play from the head, or at least play from the tide, you know, within a possession. Like, we don't play well down a lot. We're not a, like, pass first team. But yeah, I mean, I think that the third drive of the game would ended up as a punt. That was when I think there were like two or three bad snaps on a seven play drive that, you know, didn't even give the drive a chance. You know, if we get even score there, get the lead back 14-7, 10-7, whatever, like, keeps you in the fight, keeps you on schedule, keeps you what you want to do. I don't know. I don't understand how the head coach didn't think that the snap thing was, like, becoming a large issue. We had drives. All it takes is a second and 10 fumble snap to make it third and 14. Your drive's pretty much over. I mean, that is, you can't, before you even start, it's over. So,
Neil, yeah, Neil confirmed it, and he was like, I don't know what to say. He's like, I mean, you know, probably something we should talk about is, like, should a change have been made? And it's like, yeah, buddy, we're going to fucking talk about it, you know, because, yeah, ruined three drives. I think there were eight of them, eight bad snaps. And, you know, it's just this – it's this trend of – I feel like Neil – I had this down of a note. Somebody in the Discord called it out too, where it's like Yates has put in the time – he has earned the right to be the starting center of this team.
Yep.
If he's able to play. And, like, mm-hmm. clearly his legs are working and, you know, his hands are not right. Like, you know, his arms are working. So he's able to block. He's able to run all this shit. And so he has earned the right to play. And how many fucking times in 6 years has, like, that specific conversation about a position been something where, I mean, even 2 years ago when Garrett finally takes over the starting job against Oklahoma, where it's like, no, Deggie prepares, or JT prepares. We brought JT in here to play, and he's going to play. And it's just like this value of loyalty over maybe having to make a tough decision and maybe having to have a hard conversation with somebody like Brandon Yates and being like, hey, buddy, listen, I know you practiced really hard this week and that you're a fifth-year senior, and that you've tried really hard for this program for a long time, but the redshirt sophomore gives us a better chance to win tonight.
Exactly.
You know, well, and it doesn't feel like he is ever willing to have that fucking conversation.
Yeah, there does seem to be in certain scenarios, like a seniority versus like, hey, this is like
better for us at this specific moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could color it as like offensive to the rest of the team. It's like you're not putting us in the position to win because of like holding on to a seniority or a loyalty. Like, I don't know. I felt like three drives into the game, it was past the number of snaps where I'm like, this is a problem. We're literally stalling out before we can develop a play multiple times. So I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up. Can I read you three Smoking Musket tweets from last night just without context?
Yeah, and then we should probably stop because we're a fucking half hour in and we haven't talked about anything.
That's
else.
Fine. So. I'm going to just read these tweets and then we're just no context going to move on because I think the Smoking Musket has a great Twitter account and we're going to hit these. So first one, BYU, Pitt, and Arizona State went from a total flaming garbage in 2023 to 6-0, 6-0, and 5-1. West Virginia is apparently a place where you get to hang around for 6 years and probably more without playing in a single meaningful football game. That's tweet number one. Tweet number two, some guy was asking if we need to bring in Kurt Cignetti, and he's Smoking Musket tweets, Neil Brown came to West Virginia with the attitude that it was nearly impossible job and it had to be an arduous build. Kurt Cignetti went to Indiana with the attitude of, I fucking win, and they're 6-0. Third and final tweet. This is a thing about what do we do with Neil, and Smoking Muskets responds and says, your question is answered by looking at Neil Brown's body of work and asking what this dude ever turned Pitt into what they were last season, into having a shot at the college football playoffs in one off season. Just three tweets without context. Just share. I thought they were all kind of bangers. We've been on the Neil train for more than most, but those are three somewhat factual tweets, so I'm just going to get them out there. Do you watch any other Big 12 games yesterday or this weekend?
I don't even remember.
The conference is still goofy as hell.
Let me look at the scores. I watched some of Utah Arizona State, and I watched some of Colorado Kansas State.
Yeah.
I'll let you get into this a little bit. I need to go get more beers. So, yeah, you know, roll on. Good.
Yeah. Okay. So Friday night, you know, we have a ranked U.S. Hall team. The favorite to win the conference, I will remind, coming in, they're 1-1 and they're traveling to Arizona State, who has kind of had a surprising season, but Cam Rising back in the lineup. I don't know if he was really himself still. Three picks. Utah falls on the road. Utah is 1-2 in conference. I mean, they're on the outside looking in. They need a lot of help and a win out to get where they were supposed to be preseason. So pretty surprising Friday night. That game was super late. I don't think it's happening. This league's too deep. There's also just too many teams. you can't afford to lose two times. It's pretty much over at that point. So there's only three other games in the conference besides West Virginia on Saturday. BYU keeps that thing rolling. Man, they're 14th in the country. They're 3-0.
Smoke Arizona, dude. Smoke. They're for real. Okay. I mean, I think last week you were like, is BYU for real? Are we taking them seriously? It's like, yeah, I think it's about that time.
I'm giving them.
We're halfway through the year. They're 6-0. They might be top 10. We might have two top 10. Like, we're living in the fucking upside down, Joel. Iowa State, BYU, top 10. Arizona State, 5-1.
Well, see, you can win at those programs. You can't win in West Virginia. I'm just, you know, that's what I've been told.
Hey, I'm 8-1 in my restarted dynasty. So, you know, at least.
Are you accepting offers right now? another game. This was a midday game, I think. Cincinnati UCF.
Yeah.
UCF. We were very high on preseason. Cincinnati, dude, watch out. They're 4-2, 2-1. Soaresby keeping the thing cooking. They win 19-13 down in Central Florida. So, surprising one there. I mean, we have Cincy, we have both these teams on the final third of the season. So, I don't know what to think about these teams, but Cincy is a lot better, I think, than most people thought. Finding ways to win. And then the super, super nightcap. We have some late Big 12 games now.
I couldn't make it all the way through. I tried.
Yeah, this one was like in the second quarter, I think, when I went to bed. Like, it was late. Kansas State, Colorado, and Colorado was undefeated in conference play coming into this game. Mm-hmm. Kansas State pulls it out late. They score with about 2 minutes to go to take a 31-28 lead, and they hold on. I think notably, Travis Hunter got hurt somewhere in the second or third quarter of this game. Did not finish, I believe. So Kansas State got the wheels right. They're coming to Morgantown next week for a night game. So they're 2-1 in conference. They've got, you know, the thing, they still got plenty of a chance to get where they're supposed to go. So Colorado also drops a 2-1 in conference. So this conference is still wide open. I mean, we're seeing insane results every week. It is what it is. So moving on to this coming week, we have a Friday night game. Oklahoma State, I think they're coming off the bye, travel to Provo, BYU. And man, if you would have told me the line was BYU by 9 points in the preseason, you tell me there was an undefeated conference team and a winless conference team in Oklahoma State, BYU, I guarantee you picked the wrong way preseason. This doesn't kick till 10:15, which is super late. Is Oklahoma State going to get off the
I was just going to say, I might consider betting Oklahoma State in this game. Or it feels like
moment on the road.
Well, it just like at some point they have to show up, and at some point BYU has to falter, right? Like, I mean, I can't feel like I was like, and it's not even just us with these preseason deep dives where we do, you know, like an hour of research and then talk about a team. Like Vegas had their over under was 4.5. Like not everybody can have been this wrong about this team, right? Like
seriously.
I don't know. No, I don't like that spot. I don't like that spot. Going to Provo is always weird. 10-15 kick. You know, Bowman's probably going to flap his noodle, you know, 20-25 times. It's not going to be good. Is Ollie Gordon they were off this week, were they not?
They were on bye, yep.
So I don't even know if he's going to play. I mean, he got hurt against us. Maybe that I don't know if anybody you know is familiar with the Ewing theory of like your best player gets hurt and it kind of makes everything else fall into place and you start playing a different way. Like I wonder if that's going to be something where like Oklahoma State has been struggling because they have Ollie Gordon in a weird way where like you have to give him the ball because he's that good. But what that does is it lets your opponents stack the box. And then you force Alan Bowman to like. I wonder if this like alters their offensive course a little bit and allows them to actually be better offensively.
Yeah, and with 2 weeks to prepare. You wonder if Bowman's going to start. I mean, Rangel.
I mean, if you're going to make a quarterback change, a bye is a good week to do it, right? So
yeah, I mean, I could see that they trot him out there. So maybe a sneaky good game on Friday night. Just because it's Oklahoma State and they're 0-3, it's kind of crazy. So looking across the Saturday slate,
upside down.
I'm just going to go for brevity. There's only two games that are teams who are both with winning records in the conference. So a lot of kind of lopsided games where it's either like a 0-3 versus a 3-0 or you know something like that. No games really lighten me up, to be honest. The two games I'm talking about: West Virginia, Kansas State, both 2-1 in conference. The other one, Arizona State, Cincinnati, two surprise 2-1 teams. I mean, these teams were both picked like in the bottom three or four of the conference, right?
I think Arizona was last, yeah.
Yeah, so Arizona State traveling two time zones over to Cincinnati and Nippert. Cincy's favored by 2.5. I think I'm laying in Cincy here, especially with the noon kickoff. That's a 10 a.m. body clock Arizona State kickoff. I think a pretty good situational setup for Cincy here to get to 3-1 in the conference.
I think I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. You know, I'm not in charge of Arizona State logistics. I would travel Thursday if I was in charge of the football program. Let them wake up in Cincinnati on Friday and, you know, at least have that full day of, okay, we're in the Eastern time zone and, you know, then wake up Saturday feeling ready to go. So, two surprisingly good teams, two surprisingly good offenses. Dude, how about Scatabo? Scatabo just fucking shredded Utah, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, honestly, one where I'm excited to watch that at the tailgate. I'm excited to watch that at the tailgate. I'll have it on at the tailgate.
Weirdly, I got to say, so many Big 12 games are so late. Like we are the time zone where it's like we're looking. I don't think last week there was any games early. This week that's the only noon game. Then you got a handful at the 3:30 and 4 o'clock slot, and then 2 7:30s and a 10:30. Like I said, I mean, I think just for brevity today, going to kind of skip over. Not a lot of games that are
through these. Yeah,
are lighting me up. So we'll just
Colorado Arizona should be fun.
Yeah, true. I mean, that's a like you got to get off the mat because both of those teams have not really. Well, I mean. More so Arizona has not really started the season like they wanted to. There's a big game nationally also. There's two next week. There's Alabama at Tennessee, both already with a loss in the SEC. That can be a good one. And then the big one's Georgia, Texas. Georgia's a 3.5-point dog. It's the first time they're like a multi-point underdog in like 6 years or something crazy.
Is it in DKR or is it in Athens?
DKR 7:30 kick.
Yeah. Texas is good, man. They look good. Dude, Ewers. So what did they won what 33-3? Something like that. They beat Oklahoma.
I watched the first quarter and it was like 3-0. I was like, oh, Oklahoma might play with them.
Well, dude, Ewers played so bad. Ewers was so bad for like the first probably 25 minutes of that game. And they still like just absolutely squeezed the life out of Oklahoma, who, you know, I mean, having about the season I expected, but still a very talented roster. I think they have a bunch of injuries, but, you know, a talented roster. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. Well, you say you usually get 3 points for home field, right? So,
yeah,
Georgia technically half a point underdog. But, I mean, Texas is going to give them everything they want for sure. Like, this is not a week where Georgia's going to go in and have a talent advantage. Texas is a fucking good football team.
Yeah, they're really good. They're not the Big 12 Texas anymore.
Texas is back.
This is the first time last year and this year the first time I believe that they're back. So let's get into the K-State game. Kansas State favored by 3 points on the road. That's the opening line I'm seeing. So Kansas State so far this year 5-1. They're 2-1 in conference, 17th nationally. Out of conference schedule was UT Martin and Tulane. They only beat Tulane by a touchdown. They beat Arizona 31-7, and if I'm remembering correctly, that was an out of conference game. Mm-hmm. So they beat Arizona. Arizona was ranked at the time, but I don't think Arizona is quite what we thought. The only loss is to BYU, and they lost 38-9, which is looking better as time goes on. I mean, BYU is showing that they're for real. They still got waxed by BYU. I mean, I don't think that's to be understated. They beat Oklahoma State 42-20, and then they squeaked one out versus Colorado this week. What's your stock on K-State? Are you, compared to like preseason, where they were picked second in the conference, are you think they're where you thought they'd be, or what do you think?
Yeah, no, I think they're about where I think they're about what I thought they were. You know, ambushed by BYU. You know, they were up 3-0 in that game late in the second quarter. With less than 2 minutes to go in that game, they're up 3-0, and they go into halftime down 17-3. You know, and then I think BYU scored like 31 points in like 5.5 minutes of game time on either side of halftime there.
It was a really weird middle eight. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just one of those things where like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Like they had back-to-back turnovers, you know, on like their first play of a drive inside of a minute and a half, and BYU scored on both of them. BYU, obviously a better team than we thought they were. You know, I thought that was kind of an aberration at the time. Like, I think that, you know, BYU is a good team at this point. But no, I mean, I would say outside of probably BYU and Iowa State, they've been the most consistent team. You know, maybe you throw Houston into that on the other end of the spectrum of just like the level of consistency. But yeah, no, I think they're about what I thought they would be. They're where I thought they would be. They just stay doing what they do, man. Kansas State, you know, I think we've said it in passing on a lot of these pods. You know, they have an identity of basically what they've been. Since we've been in the Big 12, you know, they're going to run the ball. They're going to play good defense. They win a lot of close games. Even when you don't think that they look that good, you look at the end of the year, they won 9 games. So, I can't imagine many Kansas State fans are like disappointed with where they are right now. Like, I think they're where they thought they'd be.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do still think that BYU-Kansas State game was awfully weird. BYU scored 31 points in about a 7-minute game span. And Kansas State outgained them 367-241. So they outgained them by over 130 yards and lost the game handily. Just a weird game. They were 0-for-3 on fourth down. They just couldn't get it going. They had 3 turnovers also. I mean, they really just couldn't get out of their own way, even though I think on the margins, they were kind of the better team than BYU. So a weird, weird game there. So specifically K-State, have you looked much at their team? Avery Johnson's the quarterback, and I think he poses problems for everybody. He's a slippery athlete. You know, he can run it. I don't know what his like throwing capabilities are. He's a 73.9 grade. I don't think he's a pass-first threat, per se. you know, his big time throw to turnover worthy play ratio is 6-7. Not great. You know, he's already thrown 5 picks, averaged at the target, just 8.8. But he really can eat you up with the legs, and he's an athlete. Like, he's a big guy. He's an agile guy. Not afraid to sort of like put the shoulder down. He's already run it for almost 50 times this year, 361 yards, averaging 7.5 a carry. I mean, I think the offense sort of starts with him, and they're not afraid to call designed runs for him like often. And that is like, you know, an element that poses problems. I mean, we really haven't done great against mobile quarterbacks this year. And even in recent history, it feels like.
No, I would think of him, yeah, just like a slightly taller, bigger version of Garrett. You know, he's not like Drew Aller size. He's like 6'2", 205 kind of a thing. You know, just enough bigger that it matters. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I've liked the matchups the last 2 weeks. I do not like the matchup on either side of the ball for us here. Yeah, because you have the mobile threat. Of the quarterback, you have two really good running backs. Both of those guys, the running backs, they've targeted them 34 times out of the backfield. So that's DJ Giddens and Dylan Edwards. So two really good receiving backs out of the backfield. And the running game is just really good. The running backs are awesome. The offensive line, not that great in pass protection, but good at run blocking. You know, I think you look at the three-headed, like if you call this a three-headed monster, which I think you should. 193 attempts this year for almost 1400 yards, 7.1 a carry, 4.2 yards after contact as a trio, and 61 missed tackles forced in 6 games as a trio. So like, you know, these dudes, they're fucking good. The passing game, like you said, it's not a pass first team. Like their passing game is like, think about you're playing somebody in college football who is just running like PA slide. It's a lot of like play action RPO type stuff and get Johnson on the edge. And then they're thrown to somebody in the flat or they're thrown to somebody in like a curl zone, like 7 or 8 yards down the field. But they're trying to make it easy on him. He's been pretty mid. Like he hasn't been that good of a passer so far this year. Really bad when pressured. So I think that's probably something that is critical this week. He has the second worst pass grade when pressured in the conference. 43% completions, 38.1 pass grade. And 4 of those 7 turnover-worthy plays are when he's been pressured. But the flip side of that is when you pressure him, he is a fucking elite scrambler. He scrambled 15 times this year for almost 10 yards a carry. He's gotten 8 first downs on those 15 carries. He has 6 explosives on those 15 carries, and he has 3 touchdowns. So it's like a double-edged sword a little bit of like, do you want to pressure him? Because that's kind of when he's at his most dangerous is when he's outside of the pocket. But at the same time, if you can pressure him, that's when he's going to give you your opportunities to get takeaways and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, it's an offense that I don't think goes too far outside of its lane ever. Like they know what they want to do. They're run heavy. They're like 60% run. They avoid negative plays. They stay on schedule a lot like Iowa State does, but in a slightly different way. And yeah, I don't know. I don't like the matchup because I think their offensive line is actually better than the last couple that we've played. And so like forcing negatives, getting pressure on him might be a little bit harder than it's been the last couple weeks. So I don't know. I don't like the matchup. The receivers, pass catchers, about what we thought in our preseason preview, like pretty mid. Jace Brown's really the only one who's kind of popped. He's their number one target. I think he's come on a little bit the last couple weeks. Had 2 touchdowns last week, actually. So, I mean, that's pretty good. But overall, I mean, it's a team. They're going to force us to stop them on the ground for sure. And so, you know, I think that's the priority for the defense. Like, can we stop these guys on the ground? Nobody's really done it so far. They're averaging like 250 yards a game on the ground so far. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, could be a frustrating evening, for the defense at Mountaineer Field. I don't know. What do you think? Like what's your priority has to be stopping the run, right?
Yeah, I think both offenses want to do the same thing. I mean, I think both offenses
like looking in the mirror a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, and I think both defenses excel at stopping the run. I mean, that's the strength of both defenses as well. So I feel like this is like a double-sided strength on strength. Like, we want to run it. They're good at stopping the run, and vice versa. Like, that's how this thing shakes out. Yeah, I think you highlighted too, their pass catchers, definitely the weakest part of the offense, just at least on individual talent. They're the third lowest receiver grade in the Big 12. Would you believe right now we are the highest rated, and by a decent margin, the highest rated offense on PFF in the Big 12? Kind of crazy to see that. But yeah, I mean, they're the best run offense according to PFF. And that's what they want to do. But then, yeah, you look at, flip it to defense, look at run defense. We're the number one run defense on PFF there in the conference. They're the fourth best run defense. When you look at coverage, we are 16th out of 16. Not good. In the coverage defense, they're 13th out of 16. Also not good. Like, I feel like these teams kind of line up. You have a mobile quarterback who wants to run more than he wants to pass it. He's more talented at it. And you have a lot of talented backs on both sides of the field. I mean, I really feel like this is like mirrored up in a lot of regards. You know, another thing, pass rush, I think, is maybe the advantage we have. We're still sitting there near the top. We talked about, you know, there's lots of stats on pressures, tackles for losses. Like, we have some guys who are actually generating at a pretty high clip. They're the second lowest pass rush grade in the conference as well. So, you know, they're really not good at defending the pass. They're not getting pressure, and they're not covering great. Maybe this is a real get-right opportunity for Garrett Green through the air. I mean, we really saw some nice wrinkles in the pass game against what was a really stout defense, Iowa State. Like, they dropped, you know, they have those, like, five high guys sometimes, and we were still finding holes in the zone. So Iowa State was the number one coverage defense in the conference, and I feel like we found some things that really worked over time. So maybe you see us mixing a little more pass in, or at least having more pass success than maybe usual. But I think bread and butter, both teams want to run the ball. Both teams good at stopping running the ball. Both teams get a little nervous when the other team starts passing it. So kind of I think of some parallels here, and we're going to see who's going to, you know, block and tackle better. I mean, I think games like that tend to shake out that way. You can say this every week in the Big 12. This team isn't better than us. Maybe they're slightly better than us, but this team is like very beatable in terms of like a talent perspective. The things we see with Iowa State, I think, are things that, you know, there are these programs like Kansas State where, like, I just feel like Kansas State's always a really well-disciplined like team to play. They tend to have our number. And a big thing is going to be turnovers. I think you mentioned it with Johnson, like, can we force the turnovers on him? We've really been losing the turnover battle this year. One of the worst in power schools. Like, we're in the bottom five in power schools and turnovers. And that's one of the things. You protect the ball, and you come out. You know, we came out on top in Oklahoma State, and it made a big difference. Not that it might not have without them, but I think this game is unfortunately going to come down to some ugly, gritty margins. And hopefully the home crowd does enough, because – is it a more Neil Brown thing to lose this one and then like win out, or to like win this one and just keep us like teetering in that like middle, which is more Neil Brown esque?
No, I think the most Neil Brown thing would be to win the next two and then lose like three of the last four.
Well, the last four that we, you know, kind of penciled in is like, we like the end of the schedule. I don't know that I would make that same assessment at this point, because it's Cincinnati. And we don't have BYU. Cincinnati and Texas Tech are two teams in that final four that maybe change perspectives on. Arizona also not looking as strong as we thought. UCF not looking as strong as we thought. I mean, this conference is going to be a lot of coin toss games. You know, there's still a lot in front of us, and not to be like annoying optimist, but like there still is a lot in front of us. All six games in front of us are winnable. That's the truth. And like four or five of them are losable. So it's just going to be that way. And you got a home night game, and you got to take advantage. I mean, this, you have this and only two more home games. You got to win the home games.
Yeah. I think you're hitting on you're pulling on the right thread there. Like, when I look at Kansas State, the big thing that jumps out is the home away disparity. right? They're at Tulane. They win by a touchdown. They lose at BYU. They win at home against Oklahoma State. And then last week they're at Colorado, and they have to score late to win against the Colorado team that really does. It's not a great matchup for Kansas State, right? Like Kansas State had the advantage on paper, and it ended up kind of being a situation where like they had to score late to win that game. So, you know, and I think specifically Avery Johnson, like if you look at his splits home and away, much better at home than he is on the road, which maybe you'd expect for a first time starter, but we have to take advantage of that. He's going to give us, you know, 1, 2, 3 opportunities where, you know, he's just running and he'll like the thing he'll do is he'll run and he'll just kind of like float one where it's like a borderline throwaway, but it's not quite, you know, he's not firing it into the fucking band the way that Rocco Beck does. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's just kind of floating it towards the sideline. Like I'm kind of giving up, but I'm not like fully committed to the give up. And, we have to take advantage of that stuff. Because like you said, you know, this team is not enough better than us that like we should be scared. I mean, they're favored by 3, you know. It is strength on strength. It's one of these games where, I mean, you got to go out and fucking sack up, man. You got to cowboy the fuck up and win one of these games. You know, and I think you and I have been pretty consistent of like, hey, Neil gets October. And it's like this kind of thing where like, if you go out and fucking beat Kansas State, it doesn't erase Iowa State. It doesn't erase Pitt. But if you go out and beat Iowa State, then man, Arizona means a hell of a lot more than maybe it does if you lose. Like you got to win this game to keep. I feel like every week we say like this is a must win, or like is this the most important game of Neil Brown's tenure? And like to keep that fucking trend alive, this is one you have to win. And it really it's going to come down to who goes out and fucking cowboys up a little bit, and like. Is our defensive line going to just kick their ass up front, or are we going to let them run the ball for fucking 250 yards? You know, like, I mean, because well, it's strength on strength. Like there's no mystery about what Kansas State wants to do. You know, I think you look at this defense, like outstanding against the run. I think they're second nationally yards per game. And that's a little bit impacted by the fact that Colorado ran for minus 29 last week. And so, you know, that helps your per game average, considerably, but like everybody that they've played has had their worst output of the year on the ground against Kansas State. Very good run defense, 2.5 yards per carry. Like, I mean, you know, and so it's one of these things where it's like, are we going to let them do that to us? Or are we going to go out and assert our will, get 5 yards a pop and fucking win the thing, you know? And
from a morale standpoint, you can't afford to lose 2 night home games in a row.
No, I mean, that's the borderline. Like, I mean, coming in last week is like we're shoveling dirt on Neil's casket. Now he's got back-to-back night games against top 15 teams to shut everybody the fuck up. If he loses both of these, like, I don't see how we come back from it. Like, at some point, you have to show that you can punch above your weight and win one of these fucking games.
Yeah.
So go win the fucking game.
Go win the game. Let's do it. Do we have questions this week? I'm sure several of them center around Mr. Neil Brown.
Yeah, we do. Football coach. Here, hold on.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think, though, for just a general morale, fanhood perspective, like, if you're making the trip 2 weeks in a row to a night game, it's Bridge Day, by the way. So, you know, there are other things you can do, at least in the state. You can't afford to lay an egg in two straight home night games against ranked teams on the national stage. This game's on Fox, you know, like you gotta show up.
Show the fuck up, man.
Jordan and I are showing up. We're both going to be there.
Hey, so. West by Pod Roadshow.
Yeah.
All right. So we have from Night 676. Are you tired of the excuses from Neil Brown after losing every big game, every single time? Yeah. Yeah, I am. I think somebody put out a, I think it was the Gambling Gauchos account, put out the Neil montage of credit this guy or credit that guy, or, you know, I thought they did a great job. This is a well-coached team. It's like, fuck yeah, dude. Because they're the same excuses every fucking time for 6 years. Pull my fucking hair out. Joel, thoughts?
Same. I mean, just win, man. I get it. I understand the press conference game is not a fun one to have when you're losing these games all the time, but it's a lot more fun to win the game. Yeah, just win the game. I mean, the excuses are what they are. I don't know what I would say if I was in this position, but man, yeah, it gets old.
From Semper Montani, how many make or break games does Neil Brown get before he breaks? We've got to be up to fucking 12.
How many since we've done the podcast has it been Neil Brown's like biggest potential game, and what is our record in those games? Because it's not good.
Have we won any of them?
I mean, I don't know if we said Pitt last year was, because it was more like if you lose to Pitt last year at home, that's a, you know. But yeah. it isn't many of them.
I don't think we've won any of them. From New Name Who Dis, given the upcoming Fed decision and impact on interest rates, should Neil put his house on the market immediately after the meeting, or wait until he's fired? Also, when are you going to let us call into the pod? From the first one, you know, I feel like you wait. Interest rates are going to continue to drop. Actually, I don't know if that's better for the buyer. I don't know if that's better for the seller. I'm not an economist. Joel, do you have any thoughts about the housing market?
If interest rates drop, you're probably going to see more people feel like they can buy, so prices might go up, right? I don't know. Who could say?
I'm not an economist. When are we going to let us call into the pod? I don't know how that would work, but that would be fun.
You could do recorded messages. We could figure that out.
Yeah. Slaw, no questions, just disappointed. Same. From since a year, why did we delude ourselves into thinking Neil could actually win a big game? 8 straight L's against ranked opponents. Because we're fucking dumb.
Yeah.
We're just stupid. We're just stupid, stupid people who invest way too much time and energy and emotion into something that probably ultimately doesn't matter that much. So
You're listening to the pod, so you know we're all here. We're all suffering together.
Yeah,
you've made it this far into it. You're an hour into a podcast about us losing a game. So welcome.
That is the good thing, is that we're not alone.
Yep,
I'm not alone. Joel's not alone. Joel and I at least have each other. But you know, everybody is suffering equally.
This is loosely a support group.
Okay, questions from Dr. Feelgood and from Jord, both in the same vein. Who's next on our head coach radar shortlist? Jord wants the hot board. I don't know, man. Like, I mean, my first call would be Kotelniki.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see. I don't know. Joel, do you have any names that you like?
How set is Nick Saban on retirement? I mean, you know,
he's been wearing blue and gold ties. He has made a meal of saying, "I'm a Mountaineer. I love West Virginia." On game day, every week he says it.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been big on the hot board stuff. That's probably more for an article on SmokingMusket.com. But yeah, I don't know.
Ben in Chicago, do you think Neil gets canned in year 12 or 13? Or sorry, do you think it is near year 12 or 13 when we finally get ranked? Is the question.
Jesus, I hate it here. That's just...
I fucking hate everything. Shep asks, if we lose the next two games, can we tarmac Neil in Arizona?
Ooh, that'd be coming into a bye week. I mean, if you lose the next two, you'd be three. What do we have? Three wins.
Three and five. If we look shitty in the next two, I mean, I'd be in favor of that. Yeah. I don't know if it'll happen.
Yeah.
Apparently, Hoppy on Three Guys today said that Ren has told them that Neil is not getting fired regardless of record this year. So. Which I don't know how to feel about that. I mean, if we finish 3-9, he's not getting fired?
I don't feel good at all about that. I don't think I have the benefit of the doubt for a coach in like his first or maybe even second year, but I don't understand how you can be unfireable regardless of record in year six. That makes no sense at all to me.
No.
Results business for Wren included.
Yeah, agreed. And he's done really well so far. I am super pro Wren, but that like makes me question some stuff. Braden J713. How many more of these until something changes? Maybe two. Maybe two with a bye week after Arizona, but I don't know.
I don't know. I'm stuck on the you get October thing, and hopefully we'll have a lot more clarity in 2 weeks.
From Snooter, why? I don't know, man. I don't feel like we did anything to anybody.
Yeah.
I don't feel like we've really ever done anything to anybody. We're just kind of in our lane over here, trying to make our way as a second tier program. Like, we're not doing anything to anybody.
Indiana 6-0. Pitt 6-0. Arizona State's 5-1. I don't know.
Yeah. Since the year kind of responded to that, add Arizona State to a new coach that is lap Neil Brown will likely be ranked.
Vandy's winning games.
If Vandy didn't shit the bed against Georgia State, Vanderbilt would be ranked right now.
Really makes you think.
Jake asks, what's the prediction for the last six? I mean, it could be as good as 6-0, or it could be as bad as 1-5.
4-2, finish 7-5. That's my prediction.
And just put us in fucking purgatory.
Yeah, purg.
Gross. Let's see. Scrolling. What is our biggest missing component? Midweek prep, play calling, or recruitment? From Rocky Mountaineer. Go ahead, Joel.
It's in-game adjustments, because if you look at the Neil Brown, like the first drive of the game, the first like script of the game, man, we moved the ball. Like look at the first two drives of the game versus the rest of this game and how we moved the ball and how well things clicked versus the rest of the game. I'm going to have to just crack the numbers on these. On Neil Brown's point differential in the first half versus the second half, because, or even like first quarter versus other quarter averages, because that would be my biggest indictment. I mean, the recruitment's been fine for West Virginia standards. It's been about where it's always been. He's an A+ Sunday through Friday evening, unless we have a Thursday night game at Houston. He's really good at all those other times. Maybe too loyal to his coaching staff. To a fault. So what do you think?
I mean, yeah, that has to be, I think in-game adjustments, and then the loyalty factor, really irks me, because I'm a big, like, in a results-based business, especially meritocracy, yep, like has to reign. And so, like, you know, we're talking about the snaps this week. Like, how do you not, after the eighth bad snap, give Landon Livingston a go? Yeah. You know, after JT Daniels, like, two games, like, clearly he's hurt. He can't throw the ball the way he was for the first, like, four games. Like, why is Garrett Green not playing? It seems like a consistent trend of dudes have earned the right, as opposed to I can't keep this guy off the field. And I mean, I guess, you know, there's a couple counters to that, because he has, like, Akeem Mezador, Tyke Smith. Like, we've had dudes who have broken out as freshmen, like true freshmen, where it's like we just couldn't keep this guy off the field. But it does seem like it's only I absolutely, like, cannot keep this guy off the field, where he gives a chance to somebody else. So,
yeah,
I don't know. The loyalty thing, blessing and a curse. Like, I value it. I understand it. But, like, in a business like this, I feel like you got to be, when it's clear something isn't working, you got to be a little bit more willing to make changes than he has been.
Yep.
From 304 Yinzer, we got a series here. What is the missing ingredient that is needed to finally put this team over the top? Consistency. Like, I think we have the players, we have the talent. We just don't do it week in, week out. I don't know. What do you think?
Consistency in this season more than maybe last would be like protecting the ball. I mean, turnovers.
Yeah.
Easily the difference in this game.
I don't have Garrett's turnover where he plays, but like last year he was
really
top
good.
10 in FBS.
I'll pull it.
And turnover where they play rate. And I feel like this year he's like bottom quarter of the Big 12. I wouldn't be surprised if he has more through six games this year than he did all of last season.
I was surprised to see he only had two this week because he had two picks and a third one that should have been picked. They only gave him two.
Maybe they're counting that the first pick should not have been a pick.
This year he has 10 big time throws, 10 turnover worthy plays. It's a 4.9% on turnover worthy plays. Last year he had 8 all season, inclusive of the bowl game, a 2.3%. So he's doubled his turnover worthy play percentage. Yeah.
This is who Garrett's been this year is who we were worried that he was last year, I think. And it hasn't been quite as fun.
And then actual number 16-4 turnover to touchdown to interception this year, 8-6.
Yeah. If Neil Brown is not the head coach next year, who do we actually think A is going to deliver more, B would actually consider coming here? Kind of already. I don't have a great idea of what the hot board should be at this point. So would you rather G5 FCS head coach or hotshot coordinator? I mean, I've already said my first call would be Kotelniki. But in general, I think a program like us, you have to go G5 or FCS head coach.
Yeah, I think program builder is the way because I think we're also a unique program. I think hotshot coordinator is like the Dana experiment. It can work. It can totally be a style, but it's really got to work. And I think there's enough nuance with WVU. Program builder feels more right to me.
Yep. Last one from – oh, no, not the last one from 304 Yinzer. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Is this guy a lawyer? Famous lawyer?
No, he's not. I work with him. I know this guy.
Yeah, it's a sandwich.
I think so, yeah. Now I think it's the last one. What do we do now with all of our Black Mountaineers?
The best question, actually. Are we gonna do the coal rush again? I feel like we might do it again at some point.
Yeah, we have the jerseys, right? So
I still liked it. I mean, obviously it'd been cooler if we won. I liked it. I would be into doing it a few more times until we're like 0-4 and then we quit doing it.
304 Yinzer again. It wasn't his last one, it was his last one I saw.
On a roll.
Since it was Red River Shootout Week, what is the best state fair food?
Funnel cake or deep fried Oreos.
Those are two really good ones, yeah. I think I would go funnel cake. I'm a big funnel cake guy.
Yeah.
From 304 Yinzer, how do you feel about Neil Brown's seemingly omnipresent questioning of officiating after losses? To me, it sounds like sour grapes. It's the Big 12. Poor officiating should be the expectation, so learn to live with it. Maybe stop pussyfooting around it and put a team away for once. Agreed.
Agreed.
I mean, I get it, but no, I don't like the excuses. I mean,
officiating didn't lose us this game as much as we want to say it did. It did not lose us this game.
No.
I think bad there were snaps, only two consequential calls.
Bad snaps, not making a change lost us this game, and your quarterback making two shit decisions lost us this game.
Missed a field goal, blown coverages. I mean, yeah, there were two consequential. Most of the penalties were in garbage time or on drives that ended in the same way that if the penalty would have, you know, it didn't affect the drive.
Yep. I think that's the last question.
All right. I have an open question for our listeners. Would you be interested in West by Pod merch? We are coming up on episode 100, which is crazy to think. Not all 100 have been this iteration of West by Pod, but the Smoking Musket itself. I don't know. Hats, shirts, something simple. Just let us know in Discord if that's something you'd be into. I feel like we might get a batch as a celebratory. We're still here. We have survived, marked safe from the Neil Brown era. Like, we're still here with our signs up.
Oh, so we'll be here into the next era for sure.
Yeah,
unfortunately, it's next year, or fucking 12 years from now.
We have actually, unfortunately, been cursed, and we will be here until West Virginia is ranked. We are not allowed to quit the podcast until we're ranked. So, you can find us in the Smoking Musket Discord. I don't even have words to describe it this weekend. You just had to be there. I don't know if you were in there a lot, Jordan. There was some stuff thrown around, and
I was early, and then I faded late.
Yeah, you got to be there if you're not. Join, check out the game day threads. I feel like that's the best part of the Discord. Usually we have on game day threads, so check that out, smokingmusket.com, or on Twitter at westbypod with underscores. Give us a pepperoni roll on the blue lot if you see us this week. Go Ears, K-State down. We'll catch you next time.
1, 2, 3, 4.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.